Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamore captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast tonight. Myself, Busta and Graham Thewlis will go over a very busy couple of weeks. We have been slightly AWOL, I guess, but welcome along, guys.
Hiya. Alright, how are you doing?
Well, that was a bit of a delay there. Busta, I will start with yourself and we'll go back almost 2 weeks now. All the excitement in the last episode of the podcast, looking ahead to the Betfred League Cup final. And then it was disappointment, I suppose, a 2-0 defeat. The hopes and the expectations were so high going into the game. First 45 minutes were pretty even. We contained Celtic very well. James Forrest gets an opening goal early on in the second half. We lose a controversial penalty, which leads to the second goal. Have a man sent off. And really, I think the penalty and the consequences of the penalty have been the main talking point from that 90 minutes a couple of weeks ago at Hampden.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was disappointing to lose. Not unexpected, to be fair, but maybe the manner in which we lost was the most disappointing. I think it's probably good that we didn't actually record round about after it, because I think it'd have been a much more volatile podcast. But as you say, you know, it was disappointing to lose in the manner we did. We seemed to have a wee sort of game plan of keeping it tight for the first 45 minutes, making some changes in the second half, and then seeing what we can do as we obviously have to go forward and try win the game at that point, as long as we manage to contain them. As you say, we lost a fairly simple goal. You know, credit to Celtic at that point, and James Forrest, you know, it was a decent goal for their point of view, but disappointing to lose that kind of goal, you know, backing off the players. But you know, who knows what would have happened if we hadn't lost a man, if we hadn't conceded the penalty there. But it's, you know, as I say, I'm over that, to be honest. Yeah, it's something happened a couple of weeks ago, and I don't fancy getting worked up over it again. But disappointing to lose, but as I say, no, really unexpected.
Graham, I suppose that's it. I think we went in more with hope than expectation, but the excitement of getting to a cup final is a fantastic thing. This has been a team that have reignited a spark in quite a lot of Motherwell supporters. It was just a shame they couldn't go all the way in the day and lift the trophy.
I'd say that's absolutely true. I mean, the way in which the team plays, absolutely. It's the sort of team that whoever they are in terms of being a Motherwell fan, you want to get behind it. It's full of big, brave guys doing brave things and running hard and working hard, and more than anything else, that's the absolute minimum of, or that's exactly the sort of Motherwell team that I want to go and see. That's the Motherwell team I want to go and pay money to go and watch. And to get into the cup final kind of felt like, after the last couple of years, we seem to have done a lot of very good work kind of off the park. in terms of bringing in staff and the way in which the club presents itself. So we've done a lot of very good things off the park, and getting to the cup final really did feel like it was a sort of just reward in that respect, and that we've done all the hard work and now finally it's all sort of clicking and coming together. Like we're saying, I mean, it's something which is now a fortnight old, and it's, you let it go and it sort of passes you by in the end. But I think the thing that's the most disappointing is the sort of the lack of, you don't know quite what could have happened. I mean, yes, like you said, the frustrating thing about losing the goal to Forrest was that McHugh and Grimshaw had the ball themselves, and then gave the ball away, which we conceded a goal from, went up the other end. Gordon pulled out what was honestly just a fantastic save from Moult's header. He did absolutely everything he could have done. I also didn't know Andy Rose had that sort of cross in him as well, which I thought was kind of remarkable. But just the moments after that, with the penalty, once the penalty was given, it's the not knowing how good we are, or not knowing how close we could have taken it on the day. That's the bit that's going to sort of hang about with, certainly with me, and I imagine a lot of Oil fans as well, particularly after the performance on the Wednesday that came after that, where we really did run them close as well, as we gave ourselves as good a chance to beat them then as anyone's going to beat that Celtic team.
Plus, as you said, it's a couple of weeks old now. We don't want to dwell too much on decisions, but when we go into the league game again, we'll talk about the refereeing decisions and it changing the landscape of the game. The cup final, we'll start with a poor tackle by Cedric Kiepre, and Moussa Dembele looked like his studs were certainly high. For me, should have been a red card. There's a very similar tackle by Moussa Dembele on Carroll McHugh. Studs are high, should have been a red card. Neither resulted in a red card. Dembele was booked for his tackle. Kiepre got off scot-free, which is utterly absurd. You've then got the penalty decision where Scott Sinclair felt a touch, according to the player. He's thrown himself down. He's conned the referee. Kiepre has then been sent off as a result of that minimal contact as well. The penalty ends the game. Craig Thompson had an absolute nightmare in that cup final, didn't he?
I think everybody knows, and everybody knew before that anyway, Craig Thompson is a fanny, basically. You know, he's I think he's very, he guesses a lot of the time, I think, and he's very bad at getting it wrong. Oh, sorry, very good at getting it wrong, I suppose, when he's guessing. You know, even I think it was Charles Dunn at St Johnston, where the boy Cummins fell over his own feet or whatever he did, and he said done off for something pretty similar, to be honest with you. Again, you guessed at that as well. I'm trying not to get worked up again, because as I say, I was really annoyed on the Monday and the Wednesday games, but Craig Thompson is an abysmal referee. I think even I seen something on Twitter, I didn't have a chance to watch it, but I think he had a shocking decision last night in the Champions League as well. But as you say, going back to what you were saying, Kiepre, at the time during the game, I thought Kiepre's challenge looked fantastic. I think everybody in the stadium did, to be honest with you. You see it again in slow motion, it always looks worse, but you know, he's ended up, you know, Dembele's flicked the ball off him, he's ended up hitting him mid shin basically, and it's, you know, it was a shocking tackle, to be fair. But you know, when you see that in the full flight of the game, I think everybody in the stadium thought it looked a pretty decent but very hard tackle. I thought Dembele's looked worse in real time. You know, he sort of came in with his studs really high going down on the ball, and obviously I think it was Carroll McHugh, but again, you know, if you've seen that, he's booked him. I don't think you can really pull him up for either of them, but you know, Craig Thompson's is just a shite ref, and the decision with the, you know, the dive or the slight touch or whatever you want to call it, it killed the game as a contest. You know, as Graham was saying there, it's you know, it basically, Celtic didn't really have to push out any harder. Murrow couldn't really attack as much as they probably would have liked to. They didn't have obviously the same amount of men in the park, even if they got the ball to keep possession. But at Celtic games of contest, and as I say, you know, everybody knows Craig Thompson. We don't need to talk about him because that's exactly what he wants.
We spoke in the podcast prior to the final, Graham, with a Celtic supporter who said, "All I want is a game where we don't talk about officials or decisions, or just a good game." Then went on to play.
I went well then.
Yeah, we then went on to play Celtic three times in a week, and two games were absolutely marred by terrible officiating. And straight away, you'll go onto Twitter and you'll see, oh, there's a Rangers agenda within referees, there's a Celtic agenda. I don't subscribe to any of that pattern, to be perfectly honest. I just think our referees are so poor. The standard of officiating across the board is absolutely mince, and you get to the stage where Craig Thompson's been given a cup final. That's him being regarded as one of the best, or the best of the bunch. That is a really, really depressing situation.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, you're looking for a game without anything contentious, and I'm fully with you. I go for incompetency over conspiracy on the majority of things in life. That doesn't just colour Scottish football refereeing, just in general. The running a conspiracy is a difficult thing to do, so I'd imagine incompetence is an awful lot easier. The weekend of the cup final, there was sort of three or four decisions, and it wasn't just a Motherwell thing. It was the decision from Thomas in the final again. It's been done to death. But at the same time, what was it? That afternoon, Aberdeen had played Kilmarnock, and there'd been Stevie May, I think it was, had been flagged offside in a decision which was, it wasn't even touch and go. He was, you know, half a yard onside. Similarly, in the Hearts Ross County game as well, there was another one there where the Alex Schalk was flagged offside when he was again. He was fairly safely onside as well. So it's just decisions kind of all over the league just now, and it seems to be sort of, I don't know if it's just the way things are just now in terms of the number of games which are racking up one after another, but it just seems to be sort of every game week that comes by at the moment there's some sort of decision that you're looking at going, right, that's a poor decision, that's a poor decision, that's had an effect one way or the other. I don't know if it's just the sheer number of games or whether it is just a case of, aye, there's a lot of bad decisions happening.
No, you're right there. I think even, you know, when we come to the Wednesday as well, I think Rangers played Aberdeen the Wednesday, and was there not a thing where there was about four Rangers players offside and they scored a goal or something for it as well? But what I was going to say was, when the VAR thing was introduced, I was basically 100% against it. But as you say, not even just the Motherwell decisions, even when you see it working quite well in, you know, in Italy and Germany and, you know, wherever else uses it, you think it's maybe not such a bad thing, and it's a pity that we don't actually use it, especially when it comes to the, you know, the big games like cup finals, semi-finals, things like that, especially with somewhere like Hampden where you can, you know, you're not going to get 20 cameras at Firth Park, for example, covering every angle. But when it comes to the a national cup final, you think we'd maybe, you know, get a run out or whatever if we could.
Well, it's kind of funny that we'll move on to the Wednesday night game, and it's kind of funny that you mentioned the 20 camera angles at Firth Park, because Callum McGregor won a penalty with 2 minutes to go at Firth Park in that game, which led to the Celtic equaliser, and there was about 20 different videos of different angles at different paces of that decision. A very high octane game, the Wednesday night game was, a 1-1 draw in the end. Graham, I thought we played it very, very well. We were more positive throughout the game. I think we actually took the lead, possibly in keeping with the run of play. We deserved to go ahead. It looked like we were going to be the team to end this fantastic record that Celtic boast domestically. And just came up short with another contentious decision. Andy Rose going into the back of Callum McGregor. Callum McGregor then proceeds to do a triple somersault, and Willie Collin points straight at the spot.
It was fairly incredible the speed at which he managed to go sort of head over heels, wasn't it?
It was a 10 from me, that's for sure.
Yeah, I thought we were terrific, and it's kind of funny as well, in that we got in at half time and thought we've done pretty well here, and that's even bearing in mind that we'd, I mean, not to offer any sort of criticism of Petrovic, but he just sort of, he looked a little bit like a guy who hadn't played a lot of first team football. He was putting himself about a bit and getting himself involved in the game, but just sort of lacking a little bit of experience in terms of playing at that sort of level against those sort of players. I think at half time when Rose came on, we just looked an awful lot more solid and an awful lot more sort of compact. Can't speak highly enough about Trevor Carlson as well from the game, who on the evening we certainly didn't have any failures on the team. We had a couple of guys that had very good games, but I thought Carlson really did just kind of, I know Stephen Robinson was saying that he'd been sort of struggling a wee bit with injuries in terms of just getting himself properly fit and into the game, but I thought the way in which he sort of introduced himself as a big game player was, I thought he was absolutely stunning. I thought from start to finish, the save he made from Tierney just at the end of the first half was exactly sort of the thing that Celtic have done to any number of teams in terms of just quick movement, everyone sort of quickens their pace and then they score from it. And for Carlson to come up and somehow knock that over the bar from being on the ground was unbelievable, I thought.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the double save before the penalty as well was quite extraordinary. There's almost a couple seconds pause when Celtic attack like that, where you just expect to hear the roar from the south stand. And when Tierney went through, in particular, you just expected the ball was going to end up in the net. It was an incredible save. And I think that'll possibly bring him into contention for international honours as well, because he's certainly, albeit the game wasn't on the television, but certainly I'm sure that performance will have attracted a lot of attention and certainly got the praise it deserved too.
Well, I went and, after that game, I went and looked at the Northern Ireland squad, because I'll be honest with you, I wasn't sure who their goalkeepers were. And, you know, I can't claim to have seen a lot of Roy Carroll recently, but surely God, Trevor Carlson deserves this place in that squad. You know what I mean? It's Michael McGovern and Alan Manis, the other two, isn't it? They're pretty good goalkeepers, to be honest with you. I do like the two of them, but, you know, I can't claim to have seen a lot of Roy Carroll, but I think he's like 43-year-old or something, and I think he's playing with Linfield or something, and, you know what I mean? Trevor Carlson's got...
The last time I saw him, he was playing against us for...
Odense.
It was like 5 years ago.
Anyway, it was 43 then as well, I think.
The game itself, sorry, my throat is going at a rapid speed here, but the game itself, Bastard, we go ahead through an own goal. It's been very interesting as well that the Celtic fans keep an aggregate of the scores across these three games. But because our goal was an own goal, apparently it doesn't actually count.
Well, I don't know how many... again, skipping ahead a wee bit here, sorry, but I don't know how many messages I got on Saturday to say, oh, that proves it, or that's it, sort it, that'll shut yous up. And I replied to the first couple, and maybe three of the four or five people that messaged me says, we've beat you three times in a week. And I was like, well, that's not true, mate, to be honest with you. So I don't know how good they are at adding up. But, you know, as you say, I heard the own goal one doesn't count either. You know, it wouldn't have been that great for us if we'd have broke the run because it was an own goal, blah, 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 things like that, you know. But on the penalty, it's, again, for me, it's really, really soft. You described it as... Andy Rose goes into the back of him. I see it the exact opposite way, to be honest with you. McGregor came, threw himself across Andy Rose, to be honest with you. And, you know, I've seen every, as you said, there was a lot of angles. I've seen every one. Celtic fans seem to find one where it looked more convincing than the rest of them and decided that was it. It was a penalty because of that. And, you know, fair play to them if that's how it works. But it was a disappointing way to end that match as well, but you know, I draw at home to Celtic, all in all, it's not a bad result.
And Graham, at that point, we had played Aberdeen in the league at Pittodrie, 1-2-0, got a point against Celtic at home, a team that you would expect to have beaten us quite convincingly. Certainly last season you would have expected that, albeit the game was 4-3 and possibly their biggest scare of last season. But they, 4 points from six, and even jumping ahead like Busta likes to do and going 4 points from nine, when you looked at these three fixtures, it was kind of hard to see where the points were going to come from.
Absolutely. I mean, I'd missed the Aberdeen game because I was unfortunately through Edinburgh on a stag do, so I'd missed that and was very pleasantly surprised when the score had flashed up saying that we'd taken 3 points from Aberdeen, which, I mean, I anticipated we were going to play four games from sort of end of November up to the start of December, and I was concerned that if we'd gone to the cup final and Celtic had sort of turned up to 11 as they tend to do in sort of big domestic games when they're asked to, we could have gone to Hampden and got an absolute doing, and then spent the next two games chasing shadows after taking a doing from them, and things like that. That's a real sort of big concern for the squad, because it's the first sort of really sort of big test and big thing that they've been asked to kind of bounce back from. We've done very well this season in terms of picking up points, and even when we have dropped points again, let's say we've sort of bounced back with good performances, but not to the same sort of level of saying, right, you're going to go play Aberdeen and then Celtic three times, and then we're going to ask you to then go. I mean, before the season started, you read that and then said, oh, and then you'll go to Tynecastle after that. Not a chance would I fancy that. I don't think there's a huge number of us who would. Saying that, I'm quite looking forward to it. I quite fancy this again. So yeah, I'm fully. I think that's a measure of the job that Stephen Robinson's done for us in the squad that he's built, and that we've done this. We've run Celtic close a couple of times, as you say, the jumping ahead a wee bit to the third game. We struggled. I think it was just a game too far, and I think the club sort of admitted that as well. But we're ready to go again, and I think that's the most important thing for us now, is looking at the rest of the season and seeing what happens now.
Yeah, well, look back on the game on Saturday very briefly in just a second. Following the midweek game, though, there was a statement, and oh, we've taken a few pot shots at other clubs for releasing statements in the past. I thought it was quite interesting how Celtic went about their business, a team that pride themselves on dignity and respect and everything else that we'll no doubt cover when we talk about the Saturday game. But the statement basically was a response to Scott Brown, who had been put in front of the press and talked about being struck by objects or the Celtic players having to fend off coins and chew-its, were both items that were mentioned in particular. And I think it was almost kind of just stirring the pot that wee bit more. Quite a strange antagonising approach from Celtic, it felt, but Motherwell certainly replying quite forcefully. Busta, the talk about the ripped up seats in the South Stand, we personally experienced coins and various other bits and pieces being thrown from the South Stand at the Cup Final. I don't think there's any point in getting into a tit-for-tat battle about whose supporters are better behaved, or because let's be honest, there's certainly idiots in our support, there's plenty of idiots in their support, they've got more idiots because they're a bigger support, I guess, but the bigger part is the club are really, really backing themselves here. They're standing up against what they perceived to be an injustice. They wanted and kind of just almost not allowing us to be walked over in the mainstream media, which quite often can happen just due to the fact that Celtic boasts such a big voice.
It's first of all, you have to say that throwing things at the football, no matter what team you support, is no one, you know, that's not acceptable. I think even Stevie Robinson said that in one of the interviews when he was asked about it as well. He says, you know, you don't want people like that to go to the football. You can't be throwing coins or chew-its or cups of Coke or whatever. You know, that's just not on. But as you say, it was good to see the club actually come out and say something. I think it was more done in response, but it was more done publicly because of, dare I say it, the sort of messages that, you know, Alan Burrows was getting on Twitter. You know, what are we going to do about this, what are we going to do about that, blah, blah, blah. You know, I think that Motherwell in general were a wee bit under the cosh for their own fans, just because the way that some of them felt they'd been treated, especially like in the cup final, as you say, you know, I don't know how many times I get splashed with juice for above, you know, and as I say, these sort of things aren't really welcome at the football, but it's good to see the club aren't they going to just, you know, roll over basically and, you know, take what they're given. So it's again, as you say, statements aren't really my sort of thing either. But it's good to see at least, you know, they've got a bit of buzz about them if they need to actually say these things and, you know, stand up for themselves.
Graham, I was quite disappointed by small elements of our support in the Wednesday night game. I thought supporters, particularly older supporters that I saw, you just kind of expect for people of that age would be able to conduct themselves in a better manner. Apparently that's not the case, whether that's down to too much drink before the game or just generally not being very bright. But there was a few that let themselves down with their behaviour. The statement itself, I'm not a big fan of statements, it must be said. I think it kind of put us up in a pedestal to be knocked down, and there was plenty of people that queued up almost to take pot shots at the club for the statement. What was your take on the whole scenario? Should we have just let it die down, or was there a need to speak up about the fact that there was two games on the bounce that were dominated by a massive decision going against us?
I was kind of taking the view in general that the club are kind of damned if they did and damned if they didn't. If they didn't make a statement, then a collection of the support who are an awful lot more vocal than I am about this sort of thing were likely to come out and start complaining about it and demand some sort of... They want their pound of flesh out of it. These things have happened and they want the club to act on it. So you either do nothing and then you annoy your own fan base by doing it potentially, or alternatively you do make a statement which then opens you up to criticism, which means that any time anything regarding anything to do with Motherwell appears in the news over the next sort of 6 to 8 months, or whenever people stop holding grudges, which may be even longer than that, then at some point someone will bring that up and start moaning about it again. Like I say, I don't think there's a good out. I don't think there's a good way of doing it. For me, I would have just let it go. It's a case of if Scott Brown wants to make comments with Motherwell, Scott Brown's more than welcome to make comments with Motherwell. Same with anybody else is. Getting involved in a sort of shouting match with Celtic and Scott Brown, it's not something that I would. I don't think that's what I would have done in that scenario. I think you deal with things like that with the people involved in it, rather than making it a public thing, which then goes out on Twitter with hundreds of replies from irate Celtic, Motherwell, Rangers, Hackies, just whoever happens to be on Twitter at that point. But that's, again, as I say, the club were in a position where whatever they did, they were probably going to catch flak from somebody. So by all means, I thought they were very reasonable in terms of what they said.
Yeah, we'll move it along and we will briefly go over the 5-1 defeat that ended the Celtic trilogy, as you were. The Buster, we talked about it perhaps being a step too far. That certainly seemed like the case. That being said, Elliot Freer dragged us back into the game at 2-1. You'd maybe think that if we could just hold it for 5-10 minutes from there, and Celtic might start beginning to panic or realise they're very much in a game like they had been the previous two encounters. But I suppose in the end, Celtic too strong and showing the superiority that we knew that they had. It was just kind of the fact that our two good performances in the prior games had really given them a great test.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I didn't go. I don't think any of us did, actually, like any of us that usually go together, but I'd sort of flirted with the idea a few times, and then come Friday or whatever, I decided it was totally not worth it. Saturday, I wasn't even interested, to be honest with you. I think I had the radio or something at one point. It went to 2-0. halfway through the second half, I thought, do you know what? I'll see if I can find a dodgy Celtic TV link and turn the sound down. And you know, but
this is like a day in the life, isn't it?
But we scored, and I thought, do you know what? This is, and as you says, you know, we had a wee five, 10 minute period where I thought, do you know what? We could actually maybe come away with something here, but. What happened was your radio commentary, Sparrow, was 5 minutes ahead of my dodgy link, so you told me they'd scored at 3-1, and I just turned it off and left it at that, and I then just picked up in the chat when you were telling me it was 4-1, 5-1. So, as you say, it was not something, that was something that was probably more expected of Motherwell going to Parkhead, and, you know, the closer games we had previously, I know they were the ones at neutral venue, ones at Fir Park, but, as you say, Celtic are a far superior team. That's the sort of results the three games should have been finished, like, to be fair. And, Saturday was a total non-event, to be fair. If we managed to sneak something, it would have been absolutely fantastic. But, you know, as I say, it was a step too far. And I think, the last couple of goals probably proved that as well.
Graham, what was a real breath of fresh air was Stephen Robinson's reaction to the defeat. Yes, you're going to have to be fairly diplomatic. You've got to try and extenuate the positives from what is a pretty disappointing scoreline, certainly in the end. But he's come out, he's held his hands up for perhaps making too many changes, for tinkering with what had been a fairly successful setup in the first two games. What's fantastic about Robinson is he's received so much praise for the success that we've had so far this season, but it was good to see him put his head in the line and accept responsibility for what was a below par result and a below par performance as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's the sort of I never fail to be impressed by him and the things that he says about whatever's happened, whether it's been stuff that's happened off the park, whether it's stuff that's on the park, whether it's just asking him a question about anything else in the rest of life. Generally, I'd listen to the guy talk, and it was good for him to stick up his hand and say, look, I didn't do the right things. To be fair though, I certainly wouldn't criticise him for losing to Celtic at Parkhead in a game in which we were certainly in until sort of 15 minutes to go. At which point things changed a little bit and were less positive. But again, this is a Motherwell team which we rotated ever so slightly, and we brought in Tanner, who signed from Plymouth. We brought on Petrovicius after about an hour. We brought on Freer. We brought on McHugh later on because obviously Cadden was just sort of knackered. Whereas Celtic rotated by bringing in a player they spent £1 million on and don't play. And a French under-21 international who bangs it in for them, and then with 20 minutes to go, brought on a guy who's probably the best player in the league this year in James Forrest. So it's just a case of, I mean, not to absolve him of criticism altogether, but I actually felt kind of bad for him, and he was very, very keen to put his hands up and take the blame. But this is just the reality of what a Motherwell and Celtic game is in terms of the competition between the two. They are several levels above us, unfortunately, and that's just the way it is. But hopefully, again, quite fun. I'm glad that this sort of trilogy is over. The third one being the particular sort of Godfather 3 of the whole thing, and that nobody wants to see it ever again. But at the same time, would you? I don't know. It's just me, but later on in the season, Celtic remain in Europe. We go play Celtic again at Fir Park. Again, I'm quite, by the time that comes around, I think enough time will have passed for me to kind of fancy it and see that I fancy us again for this.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, to be honest with you. And just to sort of agree with what you said about Stevie Robinson, and, you know, you could tell me the sky was green, and I'd believe him. I think the guy's fantastic, to be honest with you. I don't think he puts a word wrong when no matter what he's asked about or whatever he's. The guy's absolutely great.
Another element of the Robinson stuff and taking the blame certainly is to tease the disappointment and the blame from the players, but there was also Brendan Rodgers' interview where he took a few pot shots at Alan Burrows as well, which, again, Rodgers is someone that I've had a great deal of respect for, actually, since he came into Scottish football. I think he's conducted himself very well. Yes, it must be quite easy when you're just put in front of the press, when you're winning every week in the league and domestically, but just seemed like a bit of a lack of class to go after a chief executive. Celtic very rarely play in the television when the game's not in. Celtic don't often play an away game when it's not on the television. I would imagine that quite a lot of people in that press room were actually looking for the footage of the penalty incident that led to Celtic's equaliser. Alan Burrows obviously has got the aid of the video analysis guy, Ross Clarkson, who would have been able to provide that footage. If Alan Burrows has shown the journalists that it's not a penalty, they just actually realised what the rest of us already knew. It wasn't a penalty. I really can't quite see the issue here. And for after a 5-1 victory, for Rodgers to then haul up Alan Burrows, it just seems utterly bizarre behaviour. It's just, he goes on about dignity and respect and class. Kind of maybe needs to practice what he preaches in that case.
Do you know what, as you said, when he came into Scottish football, I thought he was saying the right things about Scottish football in general. You know, I remember him saying things like, "There's, you know, it's not as bad as it's perceived down south. There's a lot of decent players up here, blah blah." And I think everybody, you know, was pleased he was saying these sort of things. But I think now he's realised, you know, who he's really wanting to be pleasing. I seen him again. I was on Steelman Online today, and that was the first I'd really read the match threads for the last week. And I seen him described as the Pied Piper, and I thought to myself, that's a great description of him. You know, he knows who he's talking to, and he plays him like a fiddle. You know, so he can say whatever he wants, to be honest with you. I've never really been a great fan of him, but as you say, when he came into Scottish football, I thought he was, you know, he was saying the right things, doing the right things. But I think he's realised now he's only got one set of people he needs to please, and, you know, that's the Celtic fans.
Okay, but it was quite encouraging, I suppose, to see a lot of the more educated members of the Scottish press actually coming out and backing Flo, which I'm sure was a wee bit reassurance for him, given that he's clearly highly thought of and highly regarded, and regardless of what Brendan Rodgers says, I hope he continues just working hard at his own job and concentrating and doing a good job at Motherwell.
It just seemed like a weird guy to have a pot shot at, just in terms of, you look at, there's a tweet that's done the rounds, which is Brendan Rodgers talking about when he met Danny McGrain, and just everything about it is just the most sort of saccharine nonsense. Just in terms of, me and Danny, very good, Brendan, that's terrific. I'm really delighted for you. But then just in terms of sort of picking out Alan Burrows to kind of have a go at him, a guy who turns up every day and does, I mean, as far as my understanding is, Alan Burrows does about 90% of anything that happens at Motherwell, is in terms of if something needs swept, he'll get it swept. If something else needs doing, he'll do that, and he'll essentially runs himself into the ground for the club. And I really struggle to imagine a scenario when that's something that you should be critical about. And in terms of a guy that absolutely loves whichever club that he's at, whether it's Alan Burrows at Motherwell, whether it's somebody at Hibs, somebody at Hearts, it's somebody that absolutely loves the club and loves Scottish football. So having it felt like a bit of a cheap shot, to be honest.
I know I'm continuing to go on, and maybe I shouldn't, but was Brendan Rodgers hoping that he would go round and switch off everyone's telly when they got home as well, so they wouldn't see the actual footage of the penalty decision? Because, like, for me, he backed his players, and rightfully so. I think you've got to back your own, regardless of the situation. He's the manager, he's the spokesperson. But even if he had come out and said, well, I'm not sure the referee got it right, or perhaps we got a wee bit lucky there, I would have had so much more respect than him covering up with the Scott Sinclair stuff. The Callum McGregor stuff, it was definitely a penalty, and he was almost at a stage of being offended that anyone would suggest it wasn't the case.
As far as I just said to you, he doesn't want to please you. He's got one set of people that he needs to please, and that's all he has to do. He has to say the right things to please them. And again, there's a lot of them. So, you know, as far as he's concerned, he's doing the right thing. Whether or not he believes these were fouls or these were dives or whatever, he's got one thing to say, or one set of people to keep happy, and that's all he has to do, you know. So he's doing a great job of that, to be fair. He's not got to come out and say, we got away with that there. We died for a penalty in the final. We died for a penalty there. You know, this is great. We are off cheating. You know, he's not going to come and say something like that. So I don't know what you're expecting him there, to be honest with you. What I do like about this, though, is the fact that Brendan Rodgers is having a go, Scott Brown's having a go, every Celtic fan on Facebook or Twitter or whatever you use is having a go at Muddle or Motherwell fans. We've clearly annoyed them, and it's great that they're just as upset and raging at us as Rangers fans seem to be as well. So I actually quite enjoyed myself, other than, you know, the shite bits of the football.
There's a lot to be said about the people that don't like you.
Never let it be said that they're not a good judge of character, that's for sure.
Alright.
Right, so we move on, and the trilogy is over. Hearts at Tynecastle, the game certainly going ahead the last time I checked, after yet more farcical scenarios at Tynecastle. But this is a Hearts team, Graham, that I've certainly not hit anywhere near the heights they did last season, still without a win since they moved back to Tynecastle, on the back of another pretty disappointing result at home to Accies last week. Yes, we go on the back of a 5-1 defeat, but it's one that I think the players will be relishing. It'll be a fantastic atmosphere. The first game we'll have played in front of the new main stand. One to look forward to for me.
Absolutely. It's kind of a funny one, because I thought early in the season when we played Hearts at Firth Park, even now it's kind of funny looking back at that team, because it's sort of before Campbell really established himself properly in the team. He came on in the second half and steadied the game for us when we were 2-1 up and looking to see the game out. And in the end, we did fairly comfortably. But I thought at the time that it's a really good time to play Hearts. They've got decent players, but just now they're rubbish. So we play them now, and this is a good thing. We'll get the 3 points out of it, and we'll kind of take it from there. But if anything, they're possibly worse now than they were at the time, and we're certainly better than we were when we played them earlier in the season. So I'm absolutely looking forward to it. Hopefully the game goes ahead on the basis that this does, again, as I say, it does. Now it genuinely feels like a very good time to play them. I think there's every chance we could just run them off the park. We've got players who are sort of presumably kind of fed up looking at Celtic players, so the opportunity to go chase somebody in a different jersey will be pretty exciting for them. So hopefully, yeah, really looking forward to it. It's just, we're a better team than the team that beat Hearts back in August. So yeah, be quite happy. It's a comfortable time for us, I think.
Just a few concerns in terms of injuries. Louis Moult, we're not sure as to his status with the hamstring injury. Trevor Carson certainly looked like he took a bad one in the closing stages of the Celtic game as well. Both players that they've praised to the hilt in the podcast over the course of the season, and both obviously would be massive losses.
As you say, Trevor Carson's just as important as Louis Moult is, as we obviously found out against Celtic in the Wednesday game. Russell Griffiths has actually not done pretty well as well anytime he's called upon. I know when you said that's bad, I called you the St. Johnston, the one that went right through him, but other than that, he's been pretty solid as well. And as Graham says, you know, Hearts are there for the taking. I was looking at their form basically, and I think they've won 2 of their last 10 games, and you know, it might have been they lost 1-2 and they've drew or whatever the rest of them. So you know, Hearts are a very decent team. They're a bit of a shambles off the park, and obviously with a stadium as well. So you know, as Graham says, I'm looking forward to this one as well, and I think there's a chance that we could easily come away with 3 points in the bother.
Kareem, I don't want to kind of spin it after being so positive to negative, but three away games coming up, three difficult away games, certainly a record that Fir Hill in recent years has been very poor. We go there on the Wednesday night, and then to Rugby Park against the Kilmarnock side, who seem to go from shite to sugar on a weekly basis. They're dreadful against Aberdeen, and then bounce back with a very impressive win against St Johnstone. So, for all you look at these games and think, why can't we go for 7 points? Why can't we go for 9 points? By the same token, we can't afford to get too complacent and come away with no points or a point. It's going to be a very interesting and perhaps quite pivotal week or so that's coming up.
I'd fully agree with that. That is, this is the December, as is so often the case. It's just a time at which you kind of decide what your season's going to be. If we go in the next three games, we play Hearts, who they can score one goal a game, so I'd fancy us to do more than that. Partick Thistle, who again similarly are not in particularly good form, as you say, our record at Fir Hill's pretty poor, but their record all season has been pretty poor. And then we go to Kilmarnock on the Saturday after that as well, and our record at Kilmarnock is from memory sort of excellent. So I mean, if we go the next three games, we take six, seven, or 9 points. I think we'll be doing very well. It's a big test coming back from the three Celtic games, but it's not something that I don't think the players will dwell on it for more than 10 minutes. Okay, so look, that's happened, that's over, and that's done with. Let's go to Tynecastle because we can chase them and we can beat them. Let's go to Fir Hill because we can chase them and we can beat them. Let's go play Kilmarnock because, again, we'll chase them and beat them. We beat Kilmarnock fairly comfortably earlier on in the season. Beat Partick Thistle even more comfortably and beat Hearts. So I don't see any reason why we can't go and do that. We are, as a team, fairly well set up to play away from home as well. There's pace throughout the team. There's energy throughout the team. And there's goals throughout the team as well. So I absolutely fancy us for it as well. And more than anything else, I'm dead excited because Hearts, Partick Thistle and Kilmarnock are just three cracking places to go and watch football and have a couple of scoops.
Guys, just as we head towards the end of the podcast, a few things to go over. Firstly, anyone going to Tynecastle on Saturday, we encourage you to take part in the minute's applause for Taylor Drummond. Taylor, a big Motherwell supporter, sadly passed away at the age of 21 last Friday. The background story has been shared on the podcast, Facebook and Twitter account, and right across social media and the internet over the last week. A really tragic story, and if you can, spread the word. Please get involved and let's show Taylor's family and friends that we're all thinking about them and supporting them during this really, really difficult time just now. We'd also like to pay our respects to Jamie McDougall as well from the One Team in Ayrshire podcast, who sadly passed at the weekend as well. I was lucky enough to go on the podcast with Jamie last season, and it was a good laugh, and they told me how badly they were going to beat us, and we then turned them over on the Saturday, so that was quite nice. But again, horrible news to hear, and our thoughts are with Jamie's family and friends at this time. Finally, a big thanks to anybody that donated to the podcast toy drive before the Celtic game last Wednesday. It was freezing, freezing cold, but we've got two hospitality boxes absolutely rammed with toys. They'll be distributed tomorrow night, so we're looking forward to getting up to Fir Park, and I'm sure the community trust are desperate to get all these toys from under their feet and to good homes. So thanks again for all your generosity there. It was greatly appreciated. Guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got for this week. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, no problem. Thanks very much, Spurra.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you. Goodbye.